Today on the AV Podcast, I invite Lizanne Murphy to the show as we get into her new life as a retired athlete. We discuss her experience in the Pyeongchang Winter Olympics in South Korea. God, I hope I said that right. How her transition into her new life has been since retiring from basketball. The pay scale between WNBA versus playing overseas. Can Canada handle a WNBA team? Plus, we touch on March Madness and a whole lot more. How do you listen to my podcast, you ask? Let me break it down for you. South Sharav is available wherever you listen to podcasts. You can listen and subscribe to the latest episodes on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Stitcher under the name South Sharav. Click the subscribe button on your podcast player right now if you haven't subscribed. And to listen to more podcasts on my site itself, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAV.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAV.com. It's the AV Podcast with Cal C on South Shore AV Radio. Go.
Welcome to the AV Podcast with Cal C on South Shore AV Radio.
Welcome to the AV Podcast. My next guest is a three-time Olympian. She's a decorated women's basketball player and a guest on my summer series podcast, The Stoop, right before she headed to Brazil to chase gold at the last Summer Olympics. Ladies and gentlemen, listeners of the podcast, please welcome back Lizanne Murphy to the show. How you doing, girl?
Hi, thanks for having me.
No problem. So I hear there's a rumor going around on the streets, basically, that that you don't watch NBA basketball. Like,
wait, I just have to come in and clarify one thing. I'm a two-time Olympian before people come and call us big liars.
Oh, my bad. I'm sorry.
That's okay. A little rumor. The rumor is true. Unfortunately, I have not seen any NBA games this year.
Oi. Well, you know, we'll get into that in just a minute as to why. Like I said, I have my own little theory as to why you probably don't watch it the same way. But
okay,
I'm not. It's funny. I'm not really that surprised, but it's interesting to hear that though. It's
definitely, I'm coming back for the playoffs. That's what I'm doing. I'm going to make a playoff run. Once that gets going, I'll be back on board.
So, from what I understand, you were at the last Winter Olympics just over a month ago. How was it being at your first Olympics that you weren't competing in?
Yeah, it was intense. First off, being at a Winter Games, they're so different than the summer. Mm-hmm. And then being on the working side, because I work for the Canadian Olympic Committee now, it was incredible. I had no idea how much goes on behind the scenes, especially because the Winter Games are 16 days long. Mm-hmm. And I spent 36 days in Korea.
Oh my gosh.
So that just to give you a little bit of an idea of all the work that goes on. So I got there for the setup of the village, and then when all the athletes, so I'd already been at the games for 2 weeks before the games actually started. And then, and all throughout, the days were long. We worked from, I worked from about 7 a.m. till midnight every day for the 36 days. So it was really intense, but it was so cool to see how much goes on behind the scenes and how many people are so invested in the Canadian athletes and the Canadian team doing well. That made me really appreciate my career so much more as well.
That's interesting. Like, what's like some of the behind the scenes stuff that goes into the process of setting up for the games, at least for Team Canada?
I mean, they spend so much time making the Canadian village because we have such a big team.
Right.
We always have our own residence, like a whole building in the village. There is so much time and thought put into how can we make this feel as much like home as possible for the athletes. So we bring in like every kind of Canadian snack so that when you go into the athlete's lounge, it's Canadian snacks. It's food that you know when you're at home. The athlete's lounge is really where you can really see it, is that they want the athletes to be as comfortable as possible and to have a place to go where no one else can go because it's athletes only or former athletes. And so they set it up like home. You can watch the events. There's beanbag chairs, foosball tables, a yoga room, a bike if you want to cycle. They have a whole gym inside the Canadian part of the village. it's just so impressive because they want athletes to be comfortable so that they can perform at their best.
Mm-hmm.
And then other things, I mean, we take care of all the logistics for teams. So like all of their luggage, we bring it into the rooms. We have all of their transport, all of their day planned so that they really just have to show up somewhere and go. Cause I just thought it happened by accident when I was not by accident, but I just went where people told me to go. And then buses were there, brought you to your venue. You competed, you come back. Everything is always there. But there's like a group of 25 people that make sure that that's what happens.
That everything's going smoothly.
And that there is a bus there that's going to take you to your venue, and that there is, you know, every single thing that you need along the way. It doesn't happen by accident. It's like Team Canada that made it happen. So it was really cool to see that side of it too.
And you know what, that makes sense, because I mean, as an athlete, I got to figure they want your mind to be as clear as possible, right? I mean, you already got so much pressure as it is. You don't want to be worrying about like, okay, where's my tickets? Where's this? Where's that? Right? Like you want to make sure everything is as smooth as possible.
100%. Like, they call it the Olympic bubble because you kind of are in this parallel universe where everything is taken care of for you. All the meals are cooked for you. You never actually, like, have to take care of anything. So it was interesting to have that as my experience and then to see the other side of, like, this magical bubble that, like, all the people on the back end that are running around all day to make sure that that bubble is protected and calm for the athletes.
So basically, there's got to be like a Tim Hortons section and a Harvey section. There's a Smarties room or something like that, right?
we had different sponsors than that, but yes, you get the idea. Like all the snacks were all Canadian. Everything was Canadian. I mean, we got coloring books in there. Like we had anything people would need. It was there.
No, that's interesting. Like I know, even though you spent a lot of time working there, as you said, you were there for 36 days. Did you still have the opportunity to take it in as a civilian? Meaning, like, did you get a chance to, like, I know the last time you were on the podcast before, I know you stated that it was really hard to check out other events because you were so focused on yours, and with the basketball event, it goes on for stretches out pretty much through the whole Olympics. So you don't get a chance to really see too much other events. But like this time, even though I know you're working it. Was it hard to still see certain events, or was there any events that you got a chance to go out and go and check out?
Yeah, I was really lucky. Oh, because my job at the games, so I was like the front of the house. So when you walked into the Canadian building,
yeah, not to cut you off, I should probably ask you what was your title for the.
The role I did, so I was kind of like that front of house person. I mean, in the previous games, they had four people at the front of the house. To take care of transport, ticketing, like logistics, and any problems you had within the residence. Mm-hmm. And then for these games, they decided to put four people into one. So I was that person. So okay. I pretty much just had to troubleshoot everyone's problems. And then they also wanted me there as a former athlete, because in a bit of a mentorship role, because a lot of athletes, it was their first game. To be there a bit, to kind of understand the athletes, what they've gone through, and kind of share some of my experiences. Mm-hmm. So with that, the days were really long. That's why I was there like from morning till night. But some days that it was a bit quieter, or like people would cover for each other. And so I got to go see four events. At my four events, I also saw four medals won. So I'm calling myself a good luck charm.
What were the events you got to go check out?
I saw luge when we won the bronze medal. Alex Scott was the first medal ever for a luge in the sport, so it was really cool. I saw Alex Beaulieu-Marchand win a bronze medal in slopestyle ski. So that's the one where they're on the half, like where they're on doing all the tricks and flying off the mountain.
Yeah, like the X Games, kind of the snowboard and the half pipe, right?
Yeah, it wasn't the half pipe. It's called the slopestyle. It's the one where they go off like all the ramps. And the railings and stuff like that. And then they do a bazillion flips and stuff like that.
Okay.
I saw figure skating, Tessa Virtue and Scott Moir win the gold medal. That was really awesome. And then I saw short track speed skating, and we won three medals that night. So I was really lucky.
The speed skating is the one event I missed it. I unfortunately didn't get a chance to check it. For the Winter Olympics, the speed skating is probably my favorite event. It's so intense, man. It reminds me of like the 100-meter sprints, right? Obviously. So it's like I love watching it.
It's like a 100-meter dash, but like 10 of them in a row, because so many things happen. The thing that really struck me at the game was that TV does not do any of it justice. All of these athletes are so much faster, so much more athletic, so much more powerful than they look on TV. Like, it's just incredible.
Really?
Yeah, it was so cool. And like, winter sports are a little bit dangerous, you know. Like, I played basketball. The worst thing that could happen was, like, you know, you sprain your ankle, you hurt your knee. Like, these people could, you know, have a major accident in mm-hmm. this sport. So there's a little bit of like adventure in every event. So that part is kind of, they're like really thrill seekers, I found.
Yeah, especially like the like when you see like the ski jumps and stuff like that. Yeah, because that's broken limbs, that's concussions. You don't even think about that until like it actually happens, right?
Yeah, once the game started, it was really interesting because I worked at the front of the house. I would see everyone come back from training. The amount of like black eyes and people with like totally scraped faces, like I was like, wow, this is so intense. But it's just like that comes with the territory, comes with their sport.
Mm-hmm. You ever get that itch to maybe think of like crossing over sports and doing luge, you know, that type of thing?
Oh, God, I won't pretend to be expert enough that, no, I would have had to start training a long time ago. And you see it a lot with cyclists, though, and, like, track athletes in bobsleigh,
mm-hmm.
because most of the pushers in bobsleigh are track athletes.
Right.
But I'm not even going to pretend like I used to think when I watch on TV, I could do that if I trained. Mm-hmm. After seeing it live, I'm like, nah, these people are way too athletic, way too talented. Like, I don't have what it takes.
What was the event live that you saw in person that kind of like surprised you the most? Was it like figure skating or something like that?
Oh yeah, figure skating was incredible. I just thought that it was, I don't know, it was so intense, and like the emotion that they portray when they're skating, like no one is making a single sound in the entire arena. It's just such an emotional thing, but then they're so athletic and they're skating so fast that it really. And they look good the whole time they're doing it. So I'm like, wow, that's really, that figure skating really impressed me.
And it's funny because that, when you're talking about that sense of quiet in the arena, that probably adds to the pressure of what's going through the mind of the figure skater too, because it's so quiet. You're just really in your own thoughts trying to, you know, just project your, I'm sorry, just trying to complete your, like your mission and everything else, right? Like it's gotta be a sense of pressure that gets added to that too.
Yeah, because I think that there's so, it's kind of like, tennis, you know, and golf have like their sports are quiet while they're competing,
right?
So I immediately felt a bit like, oh my gosh, this is so intense. But then they would probably feel that in basketball, because like in basketball you're comforted by the noise. Mm-hmm. that's what you know, there's like no, everything's noisy in our sport, so it's like such a difference in the two. Because I bet if they went into a basketball arena, it would be so overwhelming, like, oh my gosh, and it's so loud in here. But I felt the opposite, like, oh my gosh, it's so quiet. Yeah,
it would almost make you nervous.
Yeah, I mean, I was so nervous for them. That's what I felt as a spectator. God, I was like, man, I used to be so calm when I was an athlete, but now as a spectator, I was so nervous all the time for everybody. So it was funny.
Now, like watching how Team Canada is represented in the Winter Games, what's like the discrepancy of in terms of like the backing between what you saw in the Winter Olympics and like if you want to compare it to, what do you see the backing, how it compares to like how Team Canada treats like its hoops, for example, like in terms of the Summer Olympics, like, cause I know there's gotta be some sort of a discrepancy. I'd like to think anyway, unless I'm wrong.
No, I think you're wrong. Yeah. No, it's like, don't take that. Yeah. I think that it's just the Winter Games are so different from summer because you have so many less countries that compete. The Summer Games are just globally so, so much bigger. I mean, it's just incredible how many countries compete in the Summer Games and how many more sports we have. And so I think that Team Canada does a great job of supporting both, because in seeing how the athletes' experience was in the winter, it was the same as mine. Like,
okay.
The Canadian Olympic Committee treated me just as well as these athletes are getting treated.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, I think that Team Canada really is just proud of their athletes, but it's just summer sports are so much harder because so much more of the world competes in them. And
right.
So the field of play in certain sports is so deep. Whereas, you know, in a lot of the winter sports, you do only see like 10 competitive countries.
Right.
And in a lot of summer sports, it's like 50 competitive countries.
That's true. That's true. You know what? I'll just switching gears for a little bit.
Sure.
I know that recently that you've retired from playing professional sports. So just from having a successful overseas career. And I also know that one of the hardest things to do as an athlete is retire from a sport that you've given your all to for most of your life. like first to start off, like when did you know that you were gonna retire? Like what was like the turning point or the game or the situation that made you say, you know what, man, I got to start thinking about my post career, or you know, I'm looking forward to retirement, or when this day comes.
You know, it wasn't even a basketball moment that led me to my retirement. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're always thinking, as I got older, after like leading into Rio, even I knew I wasn't going to play basketball forever. So I'd always been thinking about my life after basketball as well. Mm-hmm. And I knew that after the Rio games, I was going to take a summer off and reevaluate. Mm-hmm. And then, but I still had 2 more years of contract in France.
Yeah.
And so when I finally came home after my pro season in the summer of 2017, I really got to spend time in Montreal for the first time in a really long time, mm-hmm. and almost 15 years. And I also got to finally take a bit of time off of basketball, because I had been on this 12-month schedule and playing year-round literally since I was like 17 years old. And so it was kind of once I stopped that I said, oh my gosh. And I got involved in a lot of different projects with, you know, like Right to Play charity. I got really involved with Indigenous kids in sport. And it was through that I was like, I can be doing a lot more. I loved playing basketball. I loved what it did for me. But as soon as I kind of stepped away from it and came home, I really just realized that it's time. It's just, it felt right to stop. Like I could have gone on for probably, you know, 3-4 more years, but then what? And so it just felt like the perfect opportunity for me to kind of jump into my next life, because I'm still young enough to do that. Mm-hmm. And so I've had such a great career in basketball. I've done so many great things and met so many great people that I felt okay ending it there. Like, I don't feel like I have anything else to prove.
Yeah, so that's good. So you're just simply at peace with everything. You don't have any, like, pangs of regret or any periods where you're, like, you're watching a game or watching something and you're like, oh, man, I want to go play right now. Like, you don't have that sense of feeling with regards to that.
No, I don't. I mean, of course, my big regret is not winning an Olympic medal. That would have been, you know, the thing that just made my life amazing. Mm-hmm. But I think there's also so much growth that happens when you don't, you know, you realize that it is just sport and it's that and it's amazing and it's great, but you're not defined by the things that you win. That was a really kind of important life lesson for me. And when I watch now, I've really been able to turn the page and just be a fan and be, you know, because I have so many good friends that are still on the national team and playing in the pros. And so I'm just like their number one fan. And mm-hmm. I'm not thinking like, oh, I wish I was still doing that, because I don't.
So I'll ask this question. So what would you say is probably like the one thing that you miss the most about being a professional athlete outside of course, the pay?
Yeah, I mean, the pay with no expenses is what it really is.
Yeah, yeah.
Your apartment's paid for, your cars. I mean, women's basketball players are not out there making millions, so it's not that. But I would say the friendship and the teammates and being like, I lived for my teammates. I loved being a part of a team for my whole life. Mm-hmm. And so I just miss that. It's the going through the bad parts, the hard part of training, but then the good parts also, and kind of going through that whole range of emotions with a group that, like, with your teammates that you become so close with. And then, but I do feel I'm getting that because I'm still very good friends with everyone on my team, and I talk to so many of my Canadian teammates, like, daily. So I still have the friendship without the training, so that's really nice. Mm-hmm. And then I find now that I'm working at the Canadian Olympic Committee, I really feel that team. So I guess if I wasn't in the job that I'm in now, maybe I would be regretting it and missing it a lot, but I do feel that fulfillment of being with, going for something together, being part of a common goal. Like, I'm getting that. So that's really nice.
I was going to say, don't forget you don't miss having those team meals. I saw some of your Instagram pics that you posted up with all those, with all yeah. those spreads and stuff.
That's it. That's what I miss. I miss all the off the court stuff. I don't miss training. I don't know. Well, I miss competing for sure, because I love that. But mm-hmm. no, that's what I miss. It's all my sisters that I played with.
Mm-hmm. Now, what would you say was, like, now looking back, like, what would you say now would be your proudest moment as a pro athlete? And it could be individual or a team thing. Like, what would you say?
Yeah, my proudest accomplishment is that I came into Team Canada and we were ranked 24th in the world. And 12 years later, we're ranked 5th in the world. And I was a huge part of that. Yeah. And that, along the way, I won a lot of awards. I won a lot of personal things in my pro contract in Europe and like
MVPs and
championships and stuff. And like, yeah, and MVPs. But it doesn't add up to like the legacy I've left with Canada basketball. And in that, I'm so proud because it's like literally my life's work in sport mattered. And I came into a program when basketball didn't matter. And now we matter in the world. We're a force to be reckoned with. We're one of the best countries in the world. And I feel I directly was a part of that.
Yeah, you were part of the Renaissance.
Yeah.
Which is serious. I mean, which is really important because, and you know, I know we discussed this like the last time you're on the pod, but like even for both sides, for both the men's and the women's teams, it's like there's a big Renaissance that's just a wave now that's probably even bigger now than when we last spoke. You know, that's on, you know, that's you've seen us represented. The one thing I want to see a little bit more of though is like, for example, like even the March Madness, because the women's March Madness games are on as well. Bless you. And you don't see it like televised a lot. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's, I would say just as an average fan, it's hard to like kind of connect in that way a little bit just because you don't see it enough. You know what I mean? Like it's, like, I feel like you can't just flip it on TSN and, at least in Canada, you can't just flip it on TSN and watch UConn play, you know, like, whatever team, like, tonight, you know what I mean, for example. Like, it's, I feel like that's the only part of it where it's, like, you wish you could connect a little bit more in that sense. But I mean, other than that, like, the renaissance for Canadian women's basketball, I think it's amazing. And, you know, obviously you played, like, a huge part in that, which is also incredible as well. Like, so, you know, it's, what I was going to ask here is, and it's funny because looking back at your like what you're saying before about retirement, when I talk to like other friends of mine or people that's that played overseas and they've retired, like not everybody has the option to retire. You know what I mean? Like it's like a lot of people sometimes, you know, they have like a bad situation that kind of like sours them on the whole experience, and they just come back home whether they're bitter or, you know, they're not 100% sure what their next step is going to be. But at least in your case, you had a chance to make that decision. You know what I mean? Which I think is also, it brings, what's the word I would say? It gives you a sense of closure when you're able to do it on your own terms. You know what I mean?
Totally. 100%. It's, and I think that's why my retirement has been really, I mean, it's been difficult, let me tell you, because I decided, you know, I still had 2 years of contract in Europe, so I wasn't planning on doing this. So I was thinking about life after basketball, but I wasn't planning for it because right. I knew I'd be in Europe for 2 more years. So in August, when I decided, I had to figure everything out. Like, I had to get a job. I had to figure out what was next. I just knew I wanted to retire, but I didn't know what that looked like and how to get out of my contract and do all these things. So the process, any kind of transition is never easy, but I think that I'm really lucky that I have a great support system. I mean, I had finished all my schooling before becoming a pro basketball player, so it wasn't like I had to figure out school and all that stuff. So in that, but it is so hard for people when their careers are ended, not on their terms. It does leave that door open of what if, what if, what if. And so I'm really grateful that I didn't have that and that I do have closure.
Yeah, which I think is really important as an athlete too. So, yeah, so the transition for you has been pretty, has it been seamless or was there like periods in time where it's been a little more like at least harder than expected? Because it sounds like right now, like it's, you've had a pretty, like, you know, I'm sure there's been a little bit of bumps in the road, but it seems like it's pretty smooth sailing right now in terms of your transition coming from, coming back home after being in Europe all these years.
Yeah, it, I would say that people looking on the outside would probably say my transition was easy. Mm-hmm. I don't agree.
Right.
Because I was so worried about getting a job, and I knew I was really, I know I'm smart. I know I've got a lot to offer, and I know I work harder than anyone I know, and that's what's helped me in my sports career. But how do you sell yourself on that when I've lived out of the country for 15 years?
Right.
And so I was really worried, and I think to overcompensate, I applied for like so many jobs. And then when I got a bunch of them, I thought, oh, great. So now I'm in that role right now, is that like, oh my gosh, I work like 80 hours a week, like sometimes 90. So, but in that, it's like a great problem to have, because I have all these great opportunities that keep coming my way, and I've managed to make the most out of them so far and do well. And that kind of just keeps doors open. So in that, there's been a lot of self-doubt, because I've been like, I don't know if I can do this. Like, I've been working at the Olympics, I had no idea if I could be able to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm running the basketball programming for Indigenous youth in Canada. I had no idea if I knew how to do that, but I do. And my experience has helped me, and I'm learning a lot of things along the way. So it's been a lot of it's been really scary to go into new territory, and because I was comfortable in my old job as a professional athlete, but it's also been really exciting to see that I'm not just a professional athlete. I am really smart. I can do a lot of things, and I do have a voice that people listen to, and that's helped me like make a lot of changes in my life and my community and things around. And so for that, it's been a really cool process of self-exploration to learn that, you know, you are labeled as this athlete, but we're so much more than that. And that's kind of really cool.
So I know you touched on this, the Indigenous program that you've been running right now. Like, how did that come about?
So it came about, I took part in the Canada 150 project summer. Mm-hmm. That I was on a ship for 2 weeks, and it was a ship that went from Toronto around Canada's three coasts to Victoria, BC. And one of the themes of it was to reconciliation with First Nations people, protecting the environment, and youth engagement. And those are a lot of things that I'm really passionate about. And what I saw when we would stop at different First Nations communities along the way was that a lot of people, because there was a very accomplished people on the ship, it was a range of any Canadian from any job, and I got on because, you know, I was an athlete, but there was a whole range. Like, we had a very accomplished teachers, politicians, like journalists, singers, like, you know, any profession. And when we'd stop in the communities, I was the person that was really accepted, and that was through sport. Mm. And I really learned that, like, wow, sport is such a powerful tool.
It's a unifier.
It is. It is. There can be so many things. People won't agree on politics. People won't agree on, like, so many things. But we can agree that kids love sports and kids love playing. And in that, when I saw that, I thought, I need to be doing something. You know, I was the only Quebecer on the national team for so long. Mm-hmm. I've had this amazing career. What can I do now to help people's lives be better? Because sport has given me so much. And through that, I really wanted to get involved in reconciliation in our country and what my part could be in that. And, you know, my call to action was through sport. And how can I get kids active? Because we know that when kids are active, they do better in school. They're better emotionally. They're happier. They do better, like, in everything that they do. They have so much less incidence with drugs and alcohol. Mm-hmm. And so in that, that's how I got involved. And then it's kind of taken off from there.
Yeah, because it's funny, because when I think of, like, when I was playing sports and stuff, like, because I played basketball up until, like, college, and, like, I think about those experiences just looking back. The amount of places that, I mean, I never went as far as you did, but, like, the amount of places and different people that you got a chance to meet and just connect with, even just from simple as just your teammates. Because coming from Montreal, like, we had a pretty diversified set of teammates, so, like, at least on my high school team and, you know, and even at, like, Ryerson and stuff, like, You get a chance to connect with people you might not have gotten a chance to connect with had you not had that basketball in your hand. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's funny how it kind of translates through life, and especially living in this country too. Like, and especially places like Montreal, or even like especially Toronto, where it's so multicultural. You get a chance to kind of interweave through different cultures and different things all the time. And sport a lot of time is a great example of that. You know, so it's good to see that you're passing that, you know, that knowledge along to Indigenous children and stuff. Like, that's, I think that's really cool.
It is, because I think I look at it now in my life now, my best friends in the world are the people that I grew up playing basketball with. Mm-hmm. There's something in sport that just brings people together and you grow together. And the best part of it is that kids are inherently good. The best things in the world you see in kids. It's adults that kind of mess it all up almost. Mm-hmm. And so kids that are in disenfranchised communities and have really difficult social scenarios that they have to face every day, I believe that if we can bring sport to those kids, it can at least be a positive outlet for them. And who knows what they can do after that? Who knows? Like, you know, sometimes people just need an out, and sport can be an unbelievable way to get an education, to go further, and or not. And you could just meet your best friends that can maybe help you through something else that's difficult in life. But all sport does is kind of bring us together. And so I want to bring that to as many communities as I can.
No, you're right. As adults, we do have a way of screwing it up for the younger generation yeah. sometimes, right? Because I always grew up hearing that saying, you know, a child's heart is made out of gold, and the ways of the world makes their heart turn cold, right? Like, we always find a way to kind of just, as you get older and the business and different things or the politics that come into certain things, like, it kind of takes that joy away from you for some people, right? So
it's so true.
Yeah, like, it's that's crazy. It's sad. It's unfortunate, but, like, I think to me it's funny, like, when I look at, like, because I have a lot of just a lot of friends and stuff that are, like, coaching and doing different things now as we're getting older, and, you know, coaching AAU teams and different things. But the one thing I always try to, like, express is, like, just make sure that, especially when you're teaching, like, the younger kids, like, make sure they still have that joy. Mm-hmm. Like, even if the kid is, like, has a project, like, the projection to be really good down the line or possibly an NBA player or whatever, like, at some point it's like, okay, just forget that for a moment. Because you see some people and it's like they take that stuff so serious, and, you know, they'll have a kid and they're like, hey, you know what, this kid is like 11 years old, yo, this kid could go to the NBA, see, and you know what, yo, we got to be on this kid. And it's like, yeah, that's cool, but he's also in grade six, you know. Let's not turn him into a professional athlete just yet, you know. Let's let him enjoy that, or let's let her enjoy some of that, what attracted them to the game in the first place.
I mean, totally. It's like almost an epidemic that stuff like that is happening. That also, because I took part in a study that was done in between the London Olympics and the Rio Olympics, mm-hmm. and they interviewed over 1,000 Olympic athletes across all sports, but summer sports. Mm-hmm. And a huge percentage, like I'm talking over 70% of the athletes, were multi-sport athletes growing up.
Yeah,
they weren't just basketball players at 5 years old. And I can say I was not. I became a basketball player at 17. Before that, I played soccer. I played basketball. I swam. I did everything. And so what we're seeing parents do now is making their kids only play one sport.
Mm-hmm.
And what that does, like, it leads to a huge incidence of, like, injury, the overuse injuries. Because by the time they're 25, they've been playing basketball for 20 years.
Yeah.
It's like... And they lose interest. By the time they're 20, they lose interest. And then we're losing the ones that could go on and be great after, because they just get sick of it. And it's not fun anymore. And it hasn't been fun since they were 10. And you're like, wow, everything is supposed to be fun when you're 10. You know, except for, like, school and chores. But every game that you play is supposed to be fun. But we're losing a bit of that. And so I think it kind of goes in waves, that because now that the research is out on that, parents are going to go back making their kids play multiple sports. And it's kind of this ebb and flow of stuff. But it is so, I don't know, I find it sad that kids stop having fun so young.
But you're right, though. Like, I think it's the specialization of sports is what I think it's killing a lot of things with it. You're right, because I look at our childhood going back, like, back in the days and stuff. And, yeah, we all played multiple sports. Like you didn't really focus on a sport until probably, like, halfway through high school, maybe even later. Like, even for myself, too. Like, I played soccer, you know, we ran track and, you know, played a little football and did, you know, like, just did active things, like, just ride your bike across the city or do different things like that just to keep yourself active and, you know, keeping the creative process in your mind going, you know, and still just, you still have that, you might have your favorite sport, but I think through playing, like, different kinds of sports and having different kind of activities, it still sparks that love for the original sport that you like, right? Like, I think when it's specialized and there's such a pressure there from, you're seeing kids from, like, 12, 13 years old, parents going crazy in the stands, and it's like, you know, they're shutting down their weekends every weekend for the entire year. You know, their vacations is around their kids' traveling schedule, and I'm like, it's like I love the booming business of it all, but I also there's negative parts that I detest too, you know what I mean? So
totally.
The specialization of it all, like, is that's the part of it that I don't like. And especially from such an early age. There's no need for it, I don't think. At least not right, not at the early age.
I totally agree.
You know what? There's a question I've always kind of wanted to ask you.
Okay.
Now, I've always been curious about this, but like, when do you think, like, for example, and I know you played overseas, but like the WNBA, and I've always had this question because when will it get to the level that they start paying players the way that they do overseas? And I know it's been in existence for like 20 plus years now, but at least my perception of it is like it doesn't totally feel like it's any closer to the pay scale that it is across the water. And the reason why I mentioned that is because I remember like about a year, a couple years ago, when the situation with Diana Taurasi, and you know, she decided to skip the WNBA season because she didn't want to mess up her contract that she had overseas. I think she was making like a couple million, and that blew me away because I'm like, the way the WNBA is kind of promoted, you would think, you know, not fact checking and looking into the salaries, but you would think that like, wow, like this is the situation where at least it's on a level playing field, at least a level playing field when it comes to the pay scale. But like seeing that story, I'm like, wow, like how far does it have to go to at least equal out?
Right. That well, the thing with Diana Taurasi a couple of years ago, so her team pretty much paid her because it's hard. You're on this year. I mean, for the last literally 15 years, I played basketball 11 and a half months in the year. So like you don't get time off, and she would be on, she was on the same schedule. So her Russian team, because she made $1 million dollars in Russia, and her Russian team paid her to take the summer off because they wanted her to play forever. And right. Your body does give out after, like, you can't maintain that rhythm forever. Mm-hmm. And so her Russian team paid her to take a season off, and she did. And part of that was to take care of her body, and part of it, I don't think that she took the season off for the financial reasons, to be honest. I think that it was more for her body. Mm-hmm. But then with that, it's not like you're losing, because the league maximum in the WNBA is $100,000. And wow. So it's for 5 months. That's not bad. Mm-hmm. Like, that's pretty good. But it is true that most players then go overseas to A, stay in shape all year, because the WNBA only lasts 5 months, and B, to make an income, because, you know, what do you do the other 7 months of the year? Yeah. And so with that, yeah, the disparity in pay is huge. But the fact that the WNBA has done that, and that's their model, is why it's successful. And so the fact that the league has run for that long is a sign that their model does work. Because if you had a season, because it's a bit of a niche market, mm-hmm. and because the season is so short, people do attend games. And okay. I guess they're not sure they can
go further than
that over an 8-month-long season. And they definitely can't compete with the money that a lot of these players make in Russia and in Turkey. Mm-hmm. So how do you keep the best of both worlds? Because if you're trying to compete with the European salaries, you probably won't. Mm-hmm. Because in Europe, they don't have the NBA, they don't have the NFL, they don't have the Major League Baseball or the NHL. So where is that? So everyone goes to your games because you're there. I'm not sure the WNBA can compete with all the markets if they're in the same season.
Yeah,
because hockey, basketball, they're all in the same season.
Mm-hmm. Hockey, basketball, and football, especially when it comes to North America, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have college basketball on top of it.
Mm,
so
yeah.
It's really tough. So I think that what the WNBA has done is why it's successful, like why it's been able to go on and maintain for so long, whereas prior to that, there had been a lot of failed ventures for a professional women's basketball league.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's in part true. I mean, it'd be amazing if Canada would get a team and we could expand the league and do more, as you know, but I mean, hopefully one day.
Yeah, because I mean, that would be interesting of like a West Coast team, like say like Vancouver, because it seems like that's such a hotbed for basketball. That whole Northwest area is just not being utilized over there. And then I think Toronto can handle they can handle it at this point, a WNBA team, I would think. I especially think so. Especially because I know earlier this year they had UConn came to play Duquesne at Ryerson. And, I mean, they didn't even really – it was sold out, but it wasn't really promoted that well. But it was sold out, like, in seconds, from what I was told. So it's interesting to see that, like, you know, you look at that, you think that, you know what, there probably is a solid market for that, at least out east. you know, at least this way, or, you know, if you want to move it to Halifax or Montreal or what have you. But I know Toronto, at least for sure, I would think can support that.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I totally agree with you. And but what's interesting is what they do in Europe in the pros is that actually the best markets for pro teams are not in major cities. Like, I played in France. There's no professional team for women in Paris, in Marseille. Like, the best teams are in the smaller markets, because then you're the main show there. So women's basketball might work in Halifax, for example, because, yeah, okay, they've got the NBL team, but but then you're competing with, like, you know, the hockey, like the juniors, whatever it's called. But in smaller markets, that's where you can get major, like, fan commitment, and people will be loyal. They don't have, like, a million different choices of things to do that weekend. So that's the model they go with in Europe, in that all of the teams are usually in smaller towns.
That's the thing, too, because, yeah, you look at, like, Halifax, like, a place like that could definitely, I mean, that is such a hotbed for basketball.
It would definitely
support, probably better than even Toronto, I would think. I think a Halifax team could definitely support a WNBA team for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I think a lot of markets in Canada. I mean, I think of, like, how well we were received in Edmonton.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they love basketball now. I think a lot of Canadian communities love basketball, and we just think we're a hockey nation. But I really believe that Canadians. Well, I think we are a hockey nation, but Canadians love basketball as well. It's such an exciting sport, and so I know. Yeah, it could work in a lot of places, I think.
Okay, and my other question I want to ask you too is, and I have a few more just before we wrap up, but you're alluding to how you play basically like a 12-month schedule. Like, where did you find time to rest as an athlete? Because I figured at some point you had to learn some sort of tricks of the trade to kind of like rest as much as possible. Did you guys practice a lot? Like, how did it work?
Yeah, I mean, in the pros, so the pro season is 8 or 9 months, depending on how far you go in the playoffs and stuff like that, and you practice twice a day. That's how it goes. And then the national team is like a 4-month schedule, and you practice twice a day as well. And, it's just really intense. You have to really learn to take care of your body. I mean, I do a lot of yoga. That's something that's really helped me, like, prolong my career.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe in the weight room. I really believe in, like, training your body to be ready. So I spent a lot of time in the weight room. I spent a lot of time doing yoga. I had a great physio that really helped. And I tried to eat well all the time. You know, a lot of the basic things in life, like, there's no secret. You know, I would not be out partying all the time. Like, you can't,
right?
Because you have to take care of your body. You have to get enough sleep. You have to be hydrated. You have to eat well. Like, it's kind of basic things. I don't have any major secrets, but it's just I really tried to take care of my body and listen to my body. If something hurt, I went and took care of it. I didn't ignore it until it became something major.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, helped me a lot as well.
How important is, like, sports psychology towards professional sports at this stage? Because you see coming around more and more hearing the term, like an athlete seeing, like, a sports psychologist or that type of thing. Like, how much do you think, like, that, like, does that play a part in what you did in your career as well? Like, did you ever had a chance to use a sports psychologist, anything like that, or no?
Huge. I would say that the reason I continued to play basketball was because of a sports psychologist. It's hard. You're in a high pressure scenario all the time. When you play with Team Canada, you're constantly being evaluated because it's so competitive to be in the best 12 women in the country. And then when you play in the pros, you have to perform day in and day out. You have to be the best player every game, and it's hard. And I've done a lot of work with sports psychologists because I'm a type A personality. I'm an overtrainer. I'm a lot of things, and I'm really hard on myself. And through a lot of work, and I've learned to be a lot more forgiving of myself. And I use a lot of visualization still in my everyday life now, even though I'm not playing sports. I believe in mindfulness. I really believe in the power of positive thinking, and the mental side of my game is what allowed me to become so much better. I peaked late in my career. I became very good late. And so a lot of people would say that I retired almost in my prime.
Mm-hmm.
And I really believe that it was finally when the mental side of things, I really thought the game, and I was able to control a lot of my emotions and deal with a lot of the stressors that come with sport, that's when I became very good. And I do think that a lot of it is thanks to the two sports psychologists I work with over my career.
Okay. So did they come in like a partway through your career, or was it like a situation where you're like halfway through your career that became an option for you? Or was that something that you were using the entire time?
No, not something I used the entire time. It was a lot had to do with funding with Team Canada. Okay. When we became good and made it to the London Olympics, mm-hmm. we got funding for a sports psychologist. And he came on with us. And then that was the year before London. And then...
So that's 2011, after that, right?
Yeah, 2011. And then, actually, he came on as a volunteer for us in the beginning because he believed in it. That's actually true. He didn't get paid. But then after the London Olympics, we had another one. And then they were with us. And I became very close with them. I'm a huge advocate for mental health awareness through the Bell Let's Talk program. It's something I believe in with all my heart and soul. And so it was through Canada Basketball that I got access. And then they helped me through a lot of my injuries.
Okay, that's amazing. Yeah, so like I said, I have a couple more questions, and then I'll wrap up. I know you said you haven't been watching NBA ball this year. my theory, correct me if I'm wrong here, but my theory is after playing basketball for so long, you kind of just want to break. Am I right or wrong for thinking that? Like just being away from the game is kind of refreshing. Like even in terms of just watching that, like just even NBA, like it's something it's kind of refreshing not watching it all the time, or, you know, being in a fantasy league or that kind of thing where you're always updated on stats and different things. Like that's my theory. I think that personally that maybe it's refreshing to take a breather from it all. I could
be
wrong.
You know what? That's not it. No, it's I still love watching. I'm around basketball all the time. I'm in the gym with kids all the time. I'm around a lot of basketball. It's, to be honest, I have not had time, like, because I work so much. Mm-hmm. So I don't. I when I get home from work, I'm not flipping on the TV and stuff. And then it's also I don't have a team anymore. My team used to be the Lakers. I was a diehard Lakers fan, and then I don't really feel like I have a team anymore, and I might sound like an old school person, I don't know, but I don't love how everybody just moves every team, and it's like...
Yeah.
So it's just, I don't feel as... I'm going to give it, and I'm also, I haven't been home during the NBA season for so long, so I'm going to watch in the playoffs, hopefully I'll get some time, but because I don't have a team, I'm kind of like, okay, I love the Raptors because they're from Canada, so you got to like support the Canadian team. But it's just, I just don't feel like I have a team. So I got to find a team, and that'll get me back on track.
When did you stop being a Lakers fan?
When Kobe retired.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No, actually, like Kobe's last 2 years, I was like, oh my gosh, this is painful. Yeah. And then I started to like, I like the Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
I liked, the players keep moving. So it's like, hold on a second. You just have to like players nowadays. Because everybody's always moving. So it's not even like players are loyal to teams. Like, it's just everybody's always moving. So it's kind of like you just have to like players. And so I like a lot of players, but I don't have a team because no one stayed.
And that's the funny thing. Like, it's a good and bad thing. Like, you're happy that the player gets the power in their hands to control those kind of decisions. But that's the bad part. You don't have any loyalty to really anybody, right? Like somebody like the Raptors, it's funny. Like they've had probably their core for like the longest while, so you can kind of attach yourself to them a little bit, at least in terms of like Lowry and DeRozan. But I remember having a conversation with a friend of mine, and he's a big LeBron fan. And once LeBron went to Miami, he was a Miami Heat guy. And now, you know, when he went back to Cleveland, now he's a Cleveland Cavaliers guy. And if LeBron goes to like Philly or wherever next year, if he doesn't stay in Cleveland, that's going to become his favorite team. You know, so it is a little weird to be in this era where it's, you know, like nobody's attached to anything.
Yeah, I find that sad. I find that's like kind of how people are in life a little bit. I don't know. I'm like, if that's the way I got to get on the bandwagon because that's the way sports going. But I like people like Paul Pierce that play in the same place for their whole career. I like that Kobe played for the same place for his whole career. And it was like they have the key to the city. Like they're heroes. I love that. And I'm looking for my next person who's going to be in their team forever, and I can love them.
Yeah, I don't know who that's going to be, because it's funny, because I know you haven't been following, but like even somebody like Kawhi Leonard, who you think that he's got the personality where he might stay for a team for 20 years, but then you hear rumors that his contract is up next year, he might bounce, and you're just like, geez, if a guy like him could leave, my God, like ain't nobody stayed loyal to their teams, then if that's the case.
Seriously.
But at least I know you've been watching some of the March Madness stuff, so I'll just ask you right out, how great was it to see a 16 seed beat a 1 seed?
Okay, well, it totally messed up my bracket, but I love, that is why I love March Madness. I love it for just how unpredictable it is, how people get so pumped up, how upsets happen. It, like, just shows everything that's fun about life. It's like, every time you think something's predictable, it's not. And the magic of it all, I love that. I love that they get to say that they were the first team to ever do it, and they wrote the history books for their school. It's so cool.
Yeah, it was a UMBC, University of Maryland, Baltimore County.
Yeah, that's it.
And you know what's funny? Like when you watch the way college basketball keeps losing players to the one and done system, and more top teams are fielding a lot of these freshmen playing like on the court at the same time, so the pressure of playing in the March Madness, it can get to a young blue chipper like on the right day once in a while. Like even though it seems more possible, like in this day and age, a 16 seed can be the 1 seed, because even though a 16 seed isn't gonna be on the same level, but the experience might be higher because a lot of these teams they got like juniors and seniors, so they're not nervous playing a freshman, even though the freshman might be like a stud and might be going to the league like right after he plays in the March Madness tournament. But I feel like looking at that game, like it's as happy as I was for UMBC, I was disappointed in Virginia. Like, you know, at some point it might happen. I was just shocked at the way that they got blown out. You know what I mean? Like I thought at some point that it would at least be like it wasn't like a buzzer beater. You know what I mean? Like the game was down to like the last couple of minutes. Like that game, when I put it on, I'm like, oh my God, is this a typo? Like they're down 20, you know? And it's like, it didn't stop. You know what I mean? So it's crazy to see like a 1 seed go down in that way. Like, I think that was probably the biggest shock. Not so much of the fact that they lost, but the fact that they got blown out as a 1 seed. I thought that was just crazy.
Yeah, it just, like, it looked like almost no one came to play. Like,
it was weird.
Yeah, it's too bad, but then it's like, it's all the credit to, they got beat. It's not that they lost that game, like, they got beat. And that's where, you're disappointed in them. I'm sure those players are so disappointed in themselves and replaying every moment of that game over and over and over again in their head. Mm-hmm. But someone's got to win, and in basketball, in this model, any given day, anyone can beat anyone, and that is what's so awesome about basketball.
And what day was your bracket destroyed? Was it by Friday night?
Oh God! Well, what day did that happen? Because I had Virginia going really far.
Yeah, I think it was Friday.
I had Arizona going far. God. Like I was done like from day one. Oh. Like it was so bad.
Yeah, Arizona was another one, and I was more annoyed, Lizanne, because I was watching that Arizona game and I left the game because I was like, you know what, I'm gonna catch them on Saturday because I want to see Ayton and I want to see these guys play. And when I came home and I saw that score, I was so mad. I was so mad at Arizona because I'm like, because I didn't do a bracket this year, but I was like, you know what, they're gonna handle this team, they should win. And that's my mistake because I should know better. But I was still disappointed because I actually wanted to see Arizona. Like, I watched them play throughout the year. I was following them pretty well, and I wanted to see them go kind of far. They disappointed me right off the shot. Like, right before I can get home, if the sun was still out when they lost. You know what I mean? Like, it's crazy. It's crazy.
That's so funny. But, oh, man. It's the worst, but it's the best.
Yeah, and you're better than me because I can't do the brackets anymore. I'm tired of having to tear up my bracket by like Friday evening. I'm tired of it. I'm done. I can't do it anymore.
My dad's part of it. It's a family thing. That's why I'm in mm-hmm. two pools, and it's like big time family. And I had no choice. Like, you're not, no one's sitting out. It's kind of like, you're not allowed to sit out of these pools. So
like for myself, I feel like the next time I do go in a bracket, I'm just gonna have my wife pick out the bracket. Just pick out the pool. The last time I had her do it, I think she ended up in third, and I've never come even close to doing that all the years I've played that. And she doesn't watch basketball at all. I feel like sorry, go ahead.
The best picks I've ever had are the ones where I'm like, oh, Wichita State, I played really good when I went there. Oh, Boston, I don't like Burgundy. I'm not taking them. When you choose things like that, that's when you're good. My mom does amazing in March Madness every year. And it's because, oh, yeah, I went to a really good restaurant one time when I was traveling mm-hmm. to Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll choose them. Oh, no, they have a terrible airport, not choosing that. Like, mm-hmm. when people choose random things, mm-hmm. that's when you do really well.
Yeah, Boise. I don't like that name, Boise. Now they're going to lose.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it, honestly.
It is. Or what's their logo? What's their team name again? Oh, the Golden Retrievers. Oh, I love Golden Retrievers. Okay, I'll choose them.
No, honestly, I think that's the way to do it. I think when you try to sit there and be like, oh, well, this team is no. Well, Arizona, they got two big men. One of them is going to be number one pick. No, they should go to the Sweet 16. When you do it that way, you lose every time. I'm convinced of it
totally.
Now. I'm convinced of it now.
It is. Okay, next year you're coming back in the pool and you're going to have a winning bracket because you're not going to go with any of your basketball knowledge.
No, I'll do the complete opposite. It's like that episode of Seinfeld where George Costanza did the complete opposite of everything else he did in his life when he became successful. That's going to be
yes.
me. Yes. That's going
to
be me.
That's the ticket. That's what we all have to do.
just do the complete opposite of everything else and just I will clean up. Yeah,
exactly.
Thank you for putting the battery in my bag. Now I'm motivated. Thank you.
Okay, good. And when you win your big pool, just remember who sent you there. So you can send me a check in the mail.
Yeah, no doubt. 10%, right? 10% for the manager? Is that how it works? 10%?
Sure. I'll take it.
All right. So my final question I want to ask you before we wrap this up. Now that you're retired, what do you want your legacy to be defined as in terms of basketball? Like when the name Lizanne Murphy gets mentioned, what do you want it to mean now that this particular chapter is closed?
I want my legacy to be, I want people to know me that, okay, yeah, sure, I was a great 3-point shooter, I was a great player, but that I really fought every day. Every single day I gave it everything I had, and that I loved my teammates, and that I lived for my teammates because I did. And if that can be what I leave on the game, that you can fight and compete and give it everything you had and be ready to try and beat someone every single day, but then still be someone who loves their team and is someone who can bring a team together, that's pretty awesome. And so I want to be known for that.
That's the meaning of life to you as an athlete, just basically just being a fighter and not quitting. And I mean, that's an amazing mantra to go by. And my, you know what? I got one more question. Now that you have this, this new chapter in your life now, when are you going to Trinidad Carnival?
When am I what?
When are you going to Trinidad Carnival?
Yay! Oh my gosh, it's still on the books. I just need to get some vacation. I don't have any vacation yet. That's on the plans. Don't worry, that's coming up. I'll let you know.
Because you're a self-proclaimed soakerhead, so you got to visit the temple. You gotta do it at least once.
Seriously, I know. I will get there. Let me tell you, and we will talk about it on on your podcast.
All right. Well, on that note, listen to Zan. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today and just sharing your story.
Thanks for having me.
No, for sure. And if you get a chance to watch some playoffs this year, I'd like to have you back for like the conference finals, breaking down some games and your thoughts on the playoffs. Like if you get a chance to do that, let me know Let me know first if you watch it.
I'll get informed. I'm about to be on the playoff bandwagon. I'm finding myself a team.
Okay, we'll do that. Just make sure it's not Cleveland.
Oh, I love LeBron James as a player, as a human, but I don't want to cheer for him. So don't worry about that.
Yeah, I want to see new blood this time, at least out of the East. Let's see somebody else come out of there.
Yeah, come on, the Raps. I'm getting on the Raps bandwagon.
I know. Let's go. Come on, Raps. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
We the North. We got to make it happen.
Exactly.
We'll be right back. Thank you all for lending me your ears so that you can tune in to the AV Podcast. Special thanks and shout out goes out to Lizanne Murphy for joining me today and sharing the new chapter, the new phase of her life since retiring from playing overseas. Listen, I give her a lot of respect, man. Not just for the fact that she got to live out her dreams and do something that she loved to do for a long time, but just because not everybody's able to walk away from the sport on their terms as an athlete, as a professional athlete. And the fact that she's able to have a successful career, be at peace with the decision, and not have the game walk away from her because of an injury or because of politics or because of the game just simply passing her by, I think that's huge. It's very underrated because a lot of athletes aren't in a position to always do that. So for that, I salute you, tip of the cap, all that stuff, all that good stuff. Listen, you can catch all of the South Sharaf shows on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Stitcher. Make sure you subscribe to that and to check out the Foundation website and to listen to my entire catalog of podcast shows. Make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. For Lizanne Murphy, this is Cal C. And you just tuned in to the AV Podcast on South Shore AV Radio. Until the next podcast, folks, peace. We out.